our goal is to be as efficient as we possibly can, because we know probably how pressing your time is given all the things that you have to manage. So we're going to try to get through the business efficiently, make the decisions that we have to make, and free us up as we go through the rest of our day. So with that, I'll call this meeting to order at the time that is indicated on Jen's clock.
Yes, 12:09.
Thank you very much. I'm assuming that we have no public comment, having had no notice of such.
No, we did not.
Great, thanks. I will now entertain a motion to approve the minutes of our last meeting, that being January 28th.
So moved.
Second. We have a move to, we have it moved and second. All in favor, let it be known by
aye.
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 Thank you. We have two agenda items that we need to engage. As you can imagine, a lot, this emergency has caused us to look at many of our procedures, but I think that there also might be some outside influence that leads us to at least examine A, and of course we want to look at B, and that is the accounting and policy procedures, and review and approve those as appropriate as well. So Ingrid, can we get an introduction to A? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, George. Good afternoon, board members. Thank you so much. As George mentioned, we have two items that we need to address. And as per George's introduction, they are both actually driven by reviews, concerns brought forward by the auditor. So we want to make sure that we address them. The first item is going to be the employee mileage and reimbursement policy review and approval for your approval. This one came as a consideration from the auditor. As he was doing the audit this year, he noticed that, as you all know, with the approval of the teleworking policy for the majority of the staff being our consultants, that teleworking policy, the way that we were addressing the mileage reimbursement for our teleworkers were having two locations for their employment, meaning home and CERC as the office as well. So what it was taking place was when somebody was traveling from their home to a particular site, they were submitting reimbursement from their home to their particular site. So I'm going to give you an example. Ingrid Kennedy lives in Torrington. If I was to travel to Stanford, I was submitting mileage from Torrington to Stanford. That is about 120 miles. I'm just throwing that number out there. However, as for the observation of the auditors, it needs to be from the work site, meaning CERC home. That's the base, CERC. So the mileage reimbursement have to be from CERC to the work site. Therefore, any teleworkers needed to deduct the regular traveling from home to the office, and then whatever is reimbursed is the difference. So if my travel to Stanford to the office is generally 60, 30, 40 miles, from Torrington to the office, and the travel to from Torrington to Stanford is 60 miles, I only can claim 20 miles, not the whole 60. So it was an observation made by the audit by the auditor.
I muted everybody. We're going to have to stay this way, I believe. Ingrid, you are unmuted, Ingrid.
Thank you. I don't know why that happened.
Yes, but I muted everybody. We're going to have to just unmute as we're on the agenda.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
That's the reason. He brought it to my attention, and it needed to be addressed. So we developed a process internally, a group lead by HR, legal, and fiscal, and then in addition to members of our staff to review the policy in order to be able to be presented to all of you. So that's what you have before you is a policy now that addresses for all CERC employees, the CERC, the office, is basically the reference point for our mileage reimbursement. And that's what you have before you. And we are making this effective as July 1st. And the reason why we're doing that is because we want to make sure that we are giving our staff that have taken advantage of this policy some time for them to become familiar with the policy and understand and actually plan for this particular change, because it's going to be a drastic change, especially for those ones who were traveling long distance. And we do anticipate some discomfort there, but the reality is this need to be addressed. I'm all set with that, Jen.
Ingrid, we're all set with the mileage portion. Now we just need to vote on it. I'm not muted.
Yes.
Okay.
In?
Yes, now you're unmuted, George.
Okay, I want to ask questions. If there are questions, I just want to say that given the current situation, Ingrid, I suspect that we're going to be minimally impacted in terms of the effective time, because so few people are probably actually moving out into districts right now. So under usual situations, this 3 months or so would have a significant financial implication for the policy. But given the fact that I imagine so few people are really going out to districts at this moment, we can both minimize our financial impact in the short term while giving people the time that they need, as you suggest, to adopt to the policy and its implications. So yes. Are there other comments or questions? Hearing no further comments or questions, Jen, are we ready to have the vote?
Yes, we are.
All right.
I'm going to unmute everybody. It doesn't seem that people are unmuting themselves. So let me okay. Unmute everybody.
All right.
Okay. Everyone should be.
Having heard Ingrid's justification for the policy, are we ready for the vote?
Yeah, but yeah. Should we have a motion?
We need a motion.
Right.
That is about, all right. May I?
Yes.
Have a motion to
so moved.
Policy.
Second.
Thanks. All in favor of the motion, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you very much. Jen, you will have a recording of the ayes have been
approved. I do have it. Yes, George.
All right, great. Thank you. Ingrid, if you can introduce the second, I'd appreciate it.
Yes.
Ingrid, can I interrupt for one moment?
Sure.
I'm sorry. I know Jen said at the beginning that the meeting is being recorded, and I should have jumped on early just because of the special situation that we're in. This meeting, which is normally a public meeting, the recording will be posted on our website as well. Just make sure that everyone's aware of that. And when you are speaking, if someone hasn't said your name so that we know who the speaker is, make sure that you say your name like I didn't do. This is Michelle Weaver speaking, so that if folks do listen to the recording, they'll know who's speaking. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that a requirement or is that a courtesy?
It's a requirement for public meetings held during the time of no one being able to gather publicly.
So it's the recording and the transcription? I thought it was one or the other.
One or the other, either the recording or a transcript.
Right. So I'll do a transcription. I won't post the recording.
Okay.
I guess I was more concerned about the, if it's just the audio or it's the visual and the audio or whatever, you know.
I shouldn't say that. I think I have two options when they download. So I would just do the audio if I did post it. But I'm happy to do the transcription.
That would be fine.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, whatever is easier, unless there's an objection by any of the participants. You know, it's just that
okay.
I might have put on another shirt or whatever.
Michelle, is this
definitely? Hi, Charlene.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi, is this in line with the executive order?
Yes.
The
yes.
governor's.
Yes.
So, George, the governor had an executive order about these kinds of meetings during the time of the pandemic.
Sure.
And not being able to meet in person to make sure we're still meeting the open rules, you know, the rules there. So it is in line with an executive order.
Great. All right, so our question, Charlene, was what was necessary? Was it audio, visual, or transcription? So whatever is necessary to satisfy the order, right. If everybody, in terms of, you know, sharing your image, if that's suitable with everybody, that's fine with me as well. All right, with that, we'll go to the second agenda item, or at least the action item to be considered.
Yes, the second item, I'm actually going to ask Glenn, Chief Financial Officer, to share with you the reason why this has been put in forward, but it's very much aligned as well with the auditor's request or some of the findings from our previous audit. So Glenn, if you don't mind, please to walk us through this particular item. Thank you.
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Glenn Hale, Chief Financial Officer. The next agenda item is two additional items to be added to the accounting policy and procedure manual. Two meetings ago, we approved the first section, and now I'm adding another section. And this is a result of prior findings from prior year audits, the lack of documented internal control policy and procedures. So two key ones I'm addressing here, first being bank reconciliation. Major part of any internal control structure, maintaining control and oversight of your assets, particularly cash and bank. So it's a very simple procedure, documents who will have what responsibilities, what the due dates will be, and then literally a step-by-step walkthrough of the procedure in the accounting system and how to execute a bank reconciliation. The second piece being the compliance reporting section. Another area which, you know, CERC had some findings on prior audits of being delinquent. So I have documented one component of compliance reporting, that is specifically the quasi-public state reporting requirements, which there are a couple of subsets. There are quarterly reporting requirements, and that encompasses both HR personnel reports and fiscal reports. And additionally, there are annual requirements, which our annual financial audit, which we hire an independent firm to conduct. And then there are several categories which we're required to report to the state, a yearly budget, a projected revenue statement, and another report to the governor and order of public accounts, most of which isn't applicable to CERC because it covers bond issuance and projects for construction and such that are not applicable, but we still have to file a report, even if it's a nil report. And then the last section is the biannual requirement of the order of public accounts, and that we are going through right now for fiscal years 17 and 18. So this documents the requirements, the periods that the requirements are due for, and then additionally I added references to the various state statutes that are require these various filings. So this will cover a couple of more items in the to-do list from prior audits, and it's just part of the ongoing practice, you know, best practice and due diligence of building proper internal controls. So at that point, if there are any questions or comments.
A comment, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great, I thank you very much. I think this is very, very necessary. And the point as we review this was to make it such that anyone who might have this responsibility will now have a procedure by which they know how exactly what to do. And I think this is very important as we plan for the inevitability that people will change. Somebody else might have the responsibility at another time, but that an individual is clear about what the procedure is and how to go about it. So I'm very appreciative of this, but more than that, as much as we approved one last time, at our last meeting, that this builds on careful attention to those things that we are developing in our calendar to improve as a matter of board oversight. So thank you very much. Are there other comments or questions? Hearing none, may I have a motion to accept this procedure?
So moved.
Seconded.
Thank you.
That was Jeff seconding.
Yep. Thank you.
Agnes making the motion.
Got it. Thank you, Agnes.
All in favor, let it be. All in favor of the procedure, let it be known by saying aye.
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 Any objections?
Aye.
Thank you. Hearing any objections? Hearing no objections, know that the procedure policy was approved unanimously. Thank you.
If anyone has just joined, would you please let us know by saying your name?
Hi, this is Brittany.
Hi, Brittany. Thank you.
Hi, Brittany.
Thank you. Thanks for joining.
Okay. Jen, you're going to have to scroll back to the agenda.
Yes, I will go back to the agenda for okay. you. Thanks. I'm sorry. I'm trying.
No problem.
Let's see if I can get this up. There we go. Okay, now we are down to 5.
Okay. Ingrid, I think you're going to need to carry us through that, through 5. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, George. This is just a couple of items that we wanted to address with all of you. I know that we have sent you communication regarding some of the things that we are doing internally in order to address the challenge that we are all facing. So regarding the cancellations for the organization, working with our partners, we have determined, especially with our Bureau of Special Education, that all activities they needed to be in person have been canceled throughout the month of April at this point. In addition, those things that we're able to transfer into a virtual platform, that is the direction that we're going. In addition to that, we are working with all of our school districts. We have worked with all of our school districts in order to be able to manage for them those in-district contracts that we have with them. So we have sent communication to all of those, the partners that are in-district partners, to let them know that any of the days that we were not able to, well, actually, first of all, we offer the option of doing virtual. And one of the things that we needed to be clear, and as we all know, that in-person learning and virtual learning, specifically to professional development, are very different. So it is a clear understanding that if we have 2 days of in-person training, that does not translate specifically to 2 days of virtual learning, meaning 6.5 hours do not translate to 6.5 hours of virtual learning. That have to be reduced, and that is for best practices, to no more than an hour and a half. Therefore, we have offered the option to do virtual, but we needed to also consider the fiscal impact that virtual learning will do for the transfer because of our pricing model. So those are some of the considerations.
Ingrid.
Yes.
Does that account for preparation time? Because I think that's a new that's not a new variable, but it's certainly a different variable. That as much as the delivery time might be abbreviated, the significant preparation time that is required might be that's a variable that also might need to be reevaluated.
Ingrid?
Is Ingrid still there?
Just man it. Let me go up to my participants here.
Okay.
Ingrid, are you there? Oh, we must have lost her. Hold on 1 second. I'm sure she'll call right back in.
And I was going to try to add to this item, and to that, Charlene, if there's anything that you can tell us about what's happening at the state that's effective to what that affects our work or that we can be advised by, I'd appreciate that briefing from you if that's possible.
Right.
Well, you're back. I'm sorry.
Okay, great.
No.
Wow, did I lose everybody? Was it me?
Yes, I think you somehow got bumped out.
Wow, I was, you all were frozen on my screen. I can see all of you frozen, and I'm like, can anybody hear me?
did we look panicked?
You were frozen on ours.
I think Zoom is being overwhelmed right now.
Probably that's what's happening. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. All right. So I will reduce my speaking remarks here. So I don't know how much were you able to hear, but at the end of all this is we're working with our districts in order to be able to come to an agreement as it relates to their contracts, pending contracts. So
I think we heard your presentation.
Okay.
I think where we lost was my question.
Right.
This have you, as much as the presentation time has been reduced relative to distance learning, is there anything around preparation time? Has that consideration been adjusted? Because in some cases, I think preparation might be even greater than what might have been the case under normal circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yes, George, thank you for that question. Actually, I began that conversation with Michelle Weaver as well. We have that because as we are going to be reviewing those contracts, that's a consideration that needs to be in place as well.
Great, thanks. Thank you for that update. I'd ask Charlene, is there anything relative to COVID that's happening at the state that we might need to just know that relates to us, our agenda, and our ability to serve our clients?
So we are 24/7 on this issue, as you can well imagine. And now for the 95% of our staff are working remotely, which is where we are. So it's the new normal for all of us. Hey, Agnes, good to see you.
Yeah, likewise.
And working with the Unified Command Center. For those who don't know that we have our statewide Unified Command, the governor has activated full time. So for some of us in the agency, including myself, we're 24/7 almost on phone calls with the Unified Command. So we know exactly what's going on across the state. All agencies been a part of that. A lot of those briefings, including the governor. And so that's where we are. Specifically for schools, and I know Jeff is on, we've been having a lot of communication with our districts and our key partners and organizations around how to handle educational opportunities for students during this time. As you all know, that there are lots of concern around students with disabilities. We put out guidance there. Mm-hmm. And thanks to Ingrid and CERC for mobilizing during this time as well, and providing and curating resources specifically for students with disabilities that we're making available to our district so they have a place to go. I know that CERC is still working very closely with Brian in the agency. Brian is very much a part of a lot of the efforts that's going forward in this case. I know Ingrid has offered up the Zoom platform and made that available. That if needed, that we're able to utilize as well. So as it is right now, for those who don't know, schools are closed, but classes are canceled per the governor's executive order through the 20th of this month. A lot of conversations occurring. If you watch the governor as a press conference every day, if you go on CTN or most of our other channels are now covering it about four.
Yeah, they are.
He's been asked a lot of questions. Superintendents want to know when will they know what the next extension of time will be. And so we're certainly working on a lot of the things that would be attached to that, for example, grades and all of that is occurring right now. So we are in full activation mode, George, addressing all things in the education space. And in some cases, coordinating with higher education when we think about grades, right? When we think about what will be accepted, especially for seniors, a lot of those conversations are indeed occurring right now. We have on our website, if you just go to the main landing page, a lot of resources that we've developed. We're just yesterday publicized some support, professional support webinars for families and also for school districts. The ones for families include social emotional learning that two of our colleagues in my area will be doing. There are on special education, and O'Brien will be doing that, and some others working with English learners that colleagues will be presenting. So we actually have two professional support tracks, one for families, one for school districts, and they're all on the website. Those webinars, a few of them will be live, some of them will be recorded and posted, and I'm trying to get that out. Thanks, Ingrid, to make sure that families know it's there. So those are all the kinds of things that we're doing, George, in this new normal in our remote working.
I just want to make a thank you very much. I think that one of the things we were speaking before you came on, that this crisis has really amplified the disparity between certain communities, their capacity, their readiness to entertain alternative modes or modalities. Mm-hmm. But also, I just wanted to make a recommendation that the governor and commissioner consider using more of the standard media to inform families of what's available. The thought that families will automatically go to the website will probably result in missing a lot of families who don't typically go to the website for direction or information, but to find the feasibility to use public advertisement, other more user-friendly or user-expected ways to let families and others know that there are supports and alternatives and things that their kids should be engaged in would be, I think.
Sorry. All right. That makes sense.
Thank you, George.
Can you hear me, Shelley?
No, I know. I said thank you for that because I know, to your point, I know that I heard from the time only because I have to jump off. We've got a superintendent call in a few minutes. But I know, for example, the city of Hartford was concerned because they got laptops that they are wanting to contribute to their students, and they're having a hard time getting all the families to stop to pick those up and having to be creative in getting the word out. And we know a part of that too is just a matter of convenience and being able, if you're relying on bus transportation and you have to have the kids in tow and safety.
Yeah, it's not a good thing.
Always the same thing. So George, to be able to utilize whatever mechanism and medium there to communicate with families. And we also recognize, and I'm sure that you've probably all learned about the 60,000 laptop contribution that has been made. What I shared this morning was also concerned about the connectivity. Having a device is one thing. Families being able to connect. I learned yesterday was if families owe any back bill with their internet provider, that's an issue because they can't get on. And some families are concerned that with this new free connection, that after a month or so, that they'll probably have a bill, bill that they have to contend with. So you're exactly right that this issue has amplified what some of those concerns are, and the issues around equity and equal access is certainly there that we have to be thinking about. So,
great,
Darlene. Charlene, one thought, in the Waterbury area, we have some Spanish-speaking radio shows that families really listen to. So that may be one vehicle, as George said, they really do listen to the Spanish-speaking radio stations. I believe Hartford area, Bridgeport area, but something to consider.
Right. So the Unified Command has all these different substructures within it. One of them is communication.
Perfect.
And just today on the call, I know they were all coordinated around all the different media in the state based on, those connected to various populations of folks that they're listening to. So they're also coordinating a statewide approach. to making sure that all families and all communities can get all the information that we're saturating the areas with.
So you're doing a great job.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to jump off on this other call.
Bye.
Thank you, Charlene.
Bye, Charlene. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We'll go to 5B. One of the things we wanted to make sure that we were aware of is our next meeting. And right now, I guess my hope is that one, we will preserve the May 26th date. We have a good sense of people who are available to participate. To the extent that an individual is not able to participate, please notify us as early as possible, but also remember the opportunity to participate through technology. I suspect that we'll still be using it by then. Mm-hmm. But even if we're going back to a regular meeting, the access through this technology is such that I think we'll continue to try to utilize. But I wanted to, one, make sure that we are aware of that as the next meeting date. And if that appears to create a problem with anybody, to the extent that we might need to consider another date, then I'd like to at least give a minute for that consideration. Otherwise, I think we can move on to six. All right, now, with that advice, then Ingrid, can you give us the updates?
Sure, George, thank you. Jen, I just need to make you aware that I'm also fine on the phone line. I noticed that I was kicked out again. So if I get kicked out, I will jump on the line. So that's me, the sixth person. So I have the phone line available just in case that I get kicked out again and I just pick up my line.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ingrid.
Sure. So just to give you a quick update, one of the key pieces that CERC's responsibility is Public Act 1912. Mm-hmm. And right now, I have not received any information regarding any flexibility to this particular legislation. So we are moving forward as if our responsibility continued to be as stated by the legislative mandate. So what we have done is actually inform all of our stakeholders, posted on our website. But I actually have asked Michelle LeBron Griffin to join us to be able to provide you a quick update of where we are with the work so far. I have spoken with Michelle Weaver as well, just in case that we need to, given the circumstance, we don't know how all this, everything seems to be moving forward, but at some point if we needed to consider asking for an extension regarding this or flexibility, we will let you know. But I just want you to know that we are being proactive regarding this responsibility, because as we all know, this is big for CERC, so we want to make sure that the effort moves forward. So I will ask. Yes,
George. Would it not be appropriate to assume that we're going to need an extension, given the interruption in the process in terms of accessing all of the committees and whatever, to send the legislature a notice of potential delay based upon it, so that we will have the greatest level of protection rather than waiting actually to the point where we're in the crisis and we're wondering what to do. Given the general nature of the situation, I think that it might be prudent for us to just to send them a notice that there is a potential delay in our schedule, and as is necessary, we expect that we'll be using the processes available through the legislature to request an extension if necessary.
George, to your point, we have already begun to put feelers out there so they are aware that we might have that potential. So we have not up to this point experienced any drastic challenges, if I can put it out there. The original one was specifically the one that involved the feedback on the focus group by students. and because of the fact that, you know, we conducted some of the focus groups, but that we have already put fillers out there. So to your point, we have already taken those steps. So that's the conversation that I had with Michelle Weaver to see at what point we will take the next step to let them know that that's the direction that we're going. So
I think that feelers are good. They don't substitute for saying this is a situation and it is likely to affect us. I just know sometimes how things get done. And those, this is going to be a struggle once the legislature is reconvened, no matter what, given all of the high costs, the additional costs of government, and what gets a priority, and what penalties might be paid, or what exceptions might be provided. I just think that everybody's now in a status, in a state of interruption, and, you know, to identify that, to be proactive with the authority to say that we are in a state of interruption that has an implication on our schedule. Please be aware of that, and we will seek whatever relief consistent with your guidance. But I think it might require more. I guess my recommendation is more than a feeler, but to actually be proactive in saying we know we have this responsibility. We're moving forward as much as the circumstances will allow, but be apprised of the fact that we may have to adjust, including our schedule, to the circumstances.
So, Jerry, if I could, that's what we have done. So I guess okay, I was going to ask clarification from you as to, do you want us to move forward and do an official request of the extension? Because what you just referenced, that's exactly what we have done. We have let them know that given the circumstances, there might be a possibility. We have made them aware
okay,
that this is the situation, but I just want to make sure that what I'm hearing from you, if you want us to do an official request, there is documentation that we have to complete for an official request for the legislation to be changed.
Well, no, I'll leave it up to you. I just think that as much as you're reaching out has gotten to the responsible people, the people who are going to be holding us accountable, then that's fine.
So if I may, Ingrid and George, good afternoon, board members. This is Michelle LeBron Griffin. We have been in touch with the State Department, George, in this regard, and we are comfortable in our agreement with them to wait till the end of April before we create any unnecessary or any undue provision. As Ingrid stated, currently we're moving all of our committee meetings to a virtual space, and there's been no disruption at this point. We've expanded or extended some timelines to accommodate for the pandemic, and that has been approved by both the State Department and our advisory group. And we actually, just the end of last week, met our timeline for our first deliverable to the State Department, which was March 27th's draft of the course learning objectives and essential questions. I had conversation with both Melissa Hickey and Stephen Armstrong this week. They're thrilled with the progress in the work and have given permission to continue in that pattern with both the course syllabus and content development committees, of which we'll be having a joint committee meeting, I think it's April 8th or April 9th, to move forward in the discussion of the units of study. So as Ingrid mentioned, we are well under, you know, the timelines and auspices, and the work is continuing. The only disruption or the only thing that has been directly affected is our in-person focus groups. So we had focus groups that were regionally situated across the state that we are now moving to virtual focus groups, which will be held advertised this week into next week. And then we know some schools are on break, so they will be held the week of April 20th. We'll actually give us or afford us the opportunity to have heightened student engagement, because that was one thing that we were limited only by the local school for student participation. We actually have collaborated through our survey responses thus far with educators who have multicultural student unions or, you know, student groups within their high schools that they are actually going to push out through their social studies department as an assignment, for a better word, for them to participate in this group. So whether it be in the live online focus group or whether it be through the survey, we will definitely have heightened student response. So one thing I will ask of all board members is that once you receive that information, that you help us with your stakeholders and constituents to get that information out, because that is really the only thing that has kind of been, they were supposed to be completed in March, but they'll be completed the end of April. That's the only thing that has really changed in regard to the effects of the pandemic. The only other thing I would share with you, just because I know I have a limited amount of time, Jen is sharing with you the infographic that was created.
Michelle, I have the wrong one up for you. I apologize.
That's okay. That's,
I like it. That was
cool. That's correct. That was prepared for our legislators in response to our legislators in regards to the status of the work, in regards to what CERC's done. Because even though we have our wonderful website that Greg Liddon has prepared, people are still seeking information. And so this was our, you know, one-stop way to kind of be sure that all of the information was available. We do have some political things that we're dealing with. So again, as a board, as you hear some of those concerns, that you please direct them to Ingrid Kennedy directly so that we can diffuse them and problem solve them as swiftly as possible. Nothing to this date in regards to our work on behalf of the legislators' perspective or the State Department's perspective or the majority of our advisory group's perspective, it hasn't been nothing but wow. CERC is amazing. Wow. CERC is such a fabulous neutral facilitator in really centralizing and organizing and coordinating the perspectives across a variety of stakeholders and helping us come to consensus. The capacity of CERC, the resources of CERC, the deliberation of CERC. So everything has been uber positive. And as you know, with any work to this magnitude that is going to have this much opportunity for transformation in our state and in our country, there will definitely be concerns. And so we have vehicles to, you know, facilitate that and foster that. What we don't want to happen is it for to go underground and on social media and behind the scenes and then become, you know, this groundswell unnecessarily. So those are the two things that we seek your support with your constituents and stakeholders in this regard. So thank you.
Thank you. That is very, very admirable. I'm very excited about the opportunity for students to be engaged. And I'm hoping that you have considered the timing of whatever the opportunity is such that they will be available, particularly within this environment, and that the schools who are responsible for alerting them and engaging them are in fact up to and are doing that with the fidelity that you expect. I am also wanting to make sure that the districts, that the districts by type, urban, rural, suburban districts, are also given an equal amount of encouragement of their students to participate. The thing that, you know, in terms of informal conversations that I have with school people, the expectation that this curriculum is to be available for all students in all schools. And so I just want to make sure that our outreach both in terms of engagement, development, and expectation, does in fact involve those suburban schools as well as those urban schools such that this can be done. And I want to also make sure that we're doing outreach to the vocational technical school system as a system, and those charter schools, because we don't expect that there will be exceptions in this, but that they all have different expectations of their students, and for them to be engaged in this work at the systems level and for us to have the benefit of their opinions is important. You probably have already done that, but I just want to remind us of its importance.
Yes, so just to stress that, George, our original face-to-face focus groups that were scheduled in regional locations, there were several things taken into consideration for selection of those sites. Mm-hmm. The first selection was based on the largest populaces of our African American and Puerto Rican Latino families, and that was Hartford and Bridgeport. Doesn't mean that we don't have same families in Waterbury, same families in New Haven, right? But the largest populaces were Hartford and Bridgeport. Then we went out to locations where we had some of our larger high schools that were in 30 to 45 minute proximity of, like you said, the four corners of our state, our Spragues, our Franklins, our Thompsons, our Mystics, you know, so that everyone could have an opportunity to participate. And so the selection of the five, which ended up being Hartford, Bridgeport, Torrington, Madison, and Norwich, fielded us the opportunity to be sure that we were covering not only the breadth of the state and the types of communities, but providing and very visibly demonstrating that this was not just a curriculum for our urban centers. And so that is an area that we got pushback on. And I will say, anyone who then said, well, we'd like you to host one in Waterbury and we'd like you to host one in New Haven, then we added those to our focus group sites in order to support those requests. But it was very important to us from the beginning, George, that we demonstrated that this was a universal model statewide curriculum that all high schools will have responsibility to implement. So they should have the same opportunity to provide input into the process.
I appreciate that, because as I anticipate, when our pushback will come from many of the suburban towns where they feel that their schedules are already crowded, and with the argument that there are few of these youngsters who are representative in their town. Yeah, I want to make sure that one of the goals is that kids who come from different backgrounds, white kids who are not Black or Latina, will have this as an opportunity to learn more about these communities, their values, and hopefully to engage in a higher level. So to the extent that we can be as inclusive, both in terms of who informs us and our expectation that it will be used in every environment, will serve us in the long run, because these communities, they have the potential to be heard, and I want to make sure that we can meet that standard in saying that we did listen to them, or at least we heard them, and we operated in what we regarded as being the best interest of the state.
So in closing, I would say that a theme that has already been aggregated from the focus groups that have been held to date, both in person and online, is this is not just going to be an absolute pivotal experience for our students of color, right, but it's going to be a critical experience for our white students.
Absolutely.
To cease the perpetuation of the racism, not only within our state, but in our country as our future leaders. So that is actually an aggregate. It came from our youth, it came from the educators, it came from community members, it came from family members, it came from every stakeholder thus far. It's actually one of the leading comments from the focus group. So we're very, very excited because one, rustling that we're hearing is that we want an African-American semester and we want a Puerto Rican Latino semester. And what we're hearing loud and clear is that they don't want this, again, power struggle between cultures. They want an integrated model where we're really investigating with critical inquiry and critical understanding and consciousness in regards to the effects of our American history across all cultures.
Great, wonderful work. I really appreciate the progress that's moving forward there.
Thank you.
Ingrid?
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you so much. So as you can see, members of the board, we are moving forward. There's a lot that has been done, and kudos to the team that is leading this effort for everything that has been done. So we really just want to continue to keep you updated with our effort. And if we have to go to the direction of asking for some flexibility in the timelines, we'll definitely will keep you updated as well. Thank you so much. Thank you, Michelle, for that report. The next item that I wanted to address is the future location. This is a little bit associated with some of the George's letter to the Department of Administrative Services. But just a quick update, there is some progress on our end, specifically to the Waterbury location. We were asked to actually visit and begin to select the furniture that is going to be place in the location. As you all recall, we went with the rather than putting up walls, which is costly for the Nogata Valley Corporation, we had agreed for them to actually fit the whole building with new furniture. So we are at that step, and this is part of the request from DAS to be able for them, the ones they get the full cost or retrofitting the building to suit the building to meet the needs of CERC, then they will go out to put the two bids. So that's where we are. We had the opportunity to do that, select the building according to the drawings that were submitted. So select the furniture, I'm sorry, according to the drawings that were submitted. So we are in a good place there. So it's moving forward. So that's as much as update that I have for you regarding that. In addition to, the fact that the letter that George, and I know he's going to be speaking to that, generated some momentum from DAS as well. So
let me just say so that we won't have to do seven. Just while we're talking it,
okay.
I was very pleased with the reception of the letter, the phone calls subsequent to it, and the department's immediate response in terms of, I think, wanting to make sure that we appreciated that they wanted to make sure that our agenda item was being attended to. So Ingrid, thank you, Michelle, all of you who followed up on my behalf. Michelle, thank you for making sure that my letter was one that would get the kind of response that we wanted from them. But I think that it cemented our partnership, and that will encourage the progress on the building to move forward. And I've been very excited about all the things that's happened since the letter. So thank you very much. And with that, I think we can dispense with my further comments later. So
Wonderful. Thank you so much, George. And the last item that I wanted to provide you with updates is with the hiring updates. One of the things that we were experiencing just before this pandemic took over our lives, it was the actual programmatic growth of the organization. We have a lot of other state agencies reaching out to us to be able to provide them with support. So we were in the process of hiring a couple of things. One of them, it was the associate director position. So we had begun the hiring process, the interviewing process, which we have put on pause right now, and we are going to be continuing to repost that position and continue the process. In addition to that, we have a couple of consultant positions that are linked to actually grants So that will be also, we are pausing on those ones right now until all this settles and we see where we are. But this is as a request from the State Department of Education that they wanted us to hire a consultant for a special project that they have specifically for climate. So that's one of the things that we are trying to, we had already developed the job description, but we are leading, we are following the lead of the board, indicating that we want to make sure that any positions that come associated with funding are linked to that funding source only, and that is the extension, the timeline for that position. So for this particular position that it was specifically requested of us, it will be a 3-year funded position. Once the funding is gone, the position is also gone as well. So that's the way that we're doing it. In addition to that, that we have a large funding that is expected to come our way, and that is for the level up work through the Department of Aging and Disabilities. And that is almost about $2 million coming to the organization. That also comes from some positions as well. That one, they said that this is more of a permanent collaboration with CERC. It's not a 3-year or 2-year time. This is a permanent collaboration, but I was very cautious of establishing the partnership and ensuring that we are only doing FTEs from our current staff rather than begin to hire new positions for that. Just in case, just we want to give it a 3-year test to make sure that it is a true long-term relationship. So that's where we are with the hiring. We have brought in 2 consultants previously before all this started, and they have been onboarding beautifully to the organization and have picked up a lot of the work that we're doing virtually and internally with our team. So that's where we are with hiring updates, and we will continue to keep you updated. And that concludes my reports. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want a question, not related to our hiring, but did the department ever hire the consultant to support your work on the curriculum?
Not yet.
Okay. All right. Don't be surprised if we don't get it. So we're moving forward without it in any event. So that's great.
Yes, we actually working, as Michelle mentioned, we are working with Steve Armstrong, who is the consultant for social studies, and directly with the director, Dr. Melissa Hickey. So they have taken on that responsibility onto that position as Phil.
That makes sense. All right, we can have, we're moving to 8. I've pretty much, unless there are any questions around the letter that I sent to Secretary Mallory, we'll move on to 8. Program Committee, Chair, thank you. Great.
Steven?
Steve? I see Steve. Okay. Did he take a break?
Are you there?
Yep. Can you hear
okay.
me?
Okay. Yep. Now I can.
Great. All right. So let me share with you, this is the most up-to-date since before we went on, before our programming and district stopped in March, mid-March. This was a copy of our fully executed contracts that are fee for service through February 2020. So as you can see, we continue to be sought out as an agency to go into districts to do contracted work that is customized to the specific needs of the profile of the district. So this continues to be an exciting venture for us as we continue to diversify our funding. But as you can see, these are some of the topics that continue to be really requested across the districts. Okay, as you can see, we have a number of district contracts that were put on hold given the district closures. So as Ingrid had shared with you, some of those we're working with the individual districts on either carryover or when we could possibly implement some of those this year, if we're able to do that. Secondly, for programming itself, Ingrid and I have a meeting with Brian tomorrow because right now we suspended all programming from mid-March through April 30th at this point, pending the decision of the governor and the commissioner. If schools don't go back into session, we will be suspending pretty much all activities through June. So that's, Ingrid and I have a meeting with Brian tomorrow to discuss, you know, how we're gonna reconcile some of this programming that's not been done. Our CERT consultants are working diligently to create some online versions and some virtual trainings for staff per Brian's request. But we'll have more details tomorrow when Ingrid and I engage in a conversation with Brian. This is a big concern for us, given that, you know, this is programming that is not gonna be executed. So stay tuned, given some of the surplus of funding that's gonna be left in programming. Ingrid, do you have any other thoughts on just those quick updates?
I don't know if everybody heard you. You were speaking kind of low. It might be my machine, but thank you for that. I think the thing that we all are concerned about, this represents the revenue generating aspect of our work. And as Ingrid had shared with you before, how we are paying a tremendous amount of attention to how do we reconstruct our contracts, how do we develop extensions, how to reprogram in a way that continues to allow revenues to come forward while we, excuse me, my telephone here is gone. Thanks. How do we continue to allow revenues to come forward even, you know, while schools are closed, but thank you very much for this report. Are there any questions regarding the financial report or the program report? I'm sorry.
Program report.
Yes, I did have a question. This is Brittany, but I think you kind of answered it as you were wrapping up. Just about, is the virtual option still available to do some of the trainings? I know it can be incredibly difficult, particularly if you have large groups. And so any options or thoughts about trying to salvage some of the trainings that are scheduled by transferring them online? But you kind of answered it in your comments, so I can wait for an update.
Although you did trigger, just a minute, I had thought, given Ingrid's comments earlier in terms of the translation of face-to-face to online, and as much as we sometimes, face-to-face is often a one-time situation, are there opportunities for us to translate this into multiple contacts with an audience around a topic, such that there might be two or three 1.5 hour contacts that would more equate to what would have been the alternative.
George, if I could offer as well, that is the direction that we're looking at. That is also an option for the school districts. Mm-hmm. And if I can also offer to the board, as the graph was put forward, it just showed to the board that we were heading in the right direction regarding the diversification of funding in every single one of our programs. If you remember, that has been one of the goals all the board regarding our diversification of funding, and we were definitely getting that direction. If I can offer two spotlights, if I could, one of them is we are actually, some of the work that we're doing with the Montessori, USA Montessori organization, we have translated some of the work on actually providing providing technical assistance to them to develop their own program of professional development, including CERC, and that will be a service that we are going to be offering. So we're still doing a lot of the work. In addition to that, we received an email, but it was actually, it tickled me, and so I want to share it with the board. We received an email from a director of a public school to say, we know how busy you're going to be after all this is over. Please put us on your queue because we need you to help us with some of the over-identification of students of colors in special education. So it was like school districts are already thinking about some of those things that they know they needed to address and who can provide them with the service. And the call, the immediate email was, please, CERC, put us on your queue because we know how busy you're going to be. So the school districts still have CERC as the partner. So I just wanted to offer that. And lastly, the last thing, as we engage in conversations with school districts about the possibility of their programs and their contracts to be extended, we have received positive response saying, of course, and they really appreciate the fact that we are so flexible on the way in which we approach in this. So I just wanted to provide that to all of you.
Great. I just want to say in the end, Stephen, thanks for this update. But more than that, you look so comfortable with that big bit with that blue chair. I mean, I think I would be tempted to go to sleep. But I mean, you you know how to make yourself comfortable. So
Well, you know, I just want to comment. I had a conference call this morning, a Zoom meeting with one of the directors who has already knows that they're going to be getting a corrective action from the State Department of Ed on a specific data point, and therefore reached out to me to begin to help him plan some training. So I've already lined up some consultants that can help support that work. So, and then just one other point about programming. The consultants are working very closely. We're fortunate at CERC that we have, each one of us has the Zoom platform. So we can create webinars, create real neat virtual training. So our consultants are working together to really around best practices for doing some online training, carrying out some of the programming work that we were supposed to carry out in a live fashion versus, you know, and so we're trying to really, really think outside of the box onto which of these programming activities can be done virtually and still maximize on task learning time for our educators. So
great. Well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Are there other questions or comments regarding the program?
Sounds really good to me. Hey guys, this is Rick. I have to sign off. I'm sorry. Things are hectic here too.
Thank you, Rick. Mr. Porth.
Take care, everybody. Take care of yourself.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We'll go to 8B, Finance Committee Report.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Okay. Hey,
Glenn,
everybody.
Would you like me to pull up the balance sheet or the revenue and expenses first? Which do you do?
You can pull up the balance sheet first. And while Jen is doing that, I'll just give everybody a brief update on the actual Finance Committee meeting. The committee met last Thursday. We went over the accounting policy and procedure manual, which this board just approved a short time ago, in a greater detail, and in particular, the quasi-public reporting requirements. We spent a significant amount of time on that, making sure, you know, all the aspects of that were covered. We also went over the state of the 2017-2018 audit, and it's still ongoing, and unfortunately by the current interruption it will be prolonged even further. So you know, hopefully we can wrap that up once things go back to normal. The other thing we did is we went over the February 2020 financial statements, which Jen just put up the balance sheet. Just shy of 1.9 million in total assets for the agency. Of that amount, just about 1.1 million was in cash at that time, and 475,000 was in receivables. And of that 475, 345,000 was receivable from CSDE for January activities. And that is still pending even as of now at the end of March. So we are definitely waiting on funding from the state. And we have since billed the state in March for February, another $285,000. So the state owes us in excess of $600,000 at this point in time, and that cash flow will definitely come in handy. And I'll go over that in more detail in a little bit. Total liabilities of $638,000. And of that, just about $90,000 is normal monthly vendor payables, and about $188,000 in payroll and benefit liabilities. A portion of that liability was carry forward money that was still pending as of the end of February, which was now improved in March for the SCTG work. And now there'll need to be further negotiations as far as either an extension or how those program dollars will get used in our new environment. So that is a little bit of a concern to the agency at this point in time, because that's money we have in the bank that we do have an obligation to execute upon. So that's it for the balance sheet. I don't know if anybody has any questions. If not, we'll move on to the revenue and expense.
Thank you.
Okay, Jen, you can. So revenue and expense, the normal four column format, the first column being the original approved budget for the year, which had a total revenue just shy of 5.8 million. Second column, committed funds. Those were the signed contracts and the various committed grants and so on for the fiscal year. Next column is the variance between the original budget and the commitments. And we were tracking ahead, which was definitely a good sign. And we had collected just about $3.2 million through February. So from a revenue perspective, we were on a good trajectory. And as was just discussed, with all programs coming to a halt, our revenue streams are basically halted, with the exception of some items that we were already in progress on and yet to bill for. So March activities, there was some before the shutdown, so we should be able to generate some revenue from that, some cash flow. In addition to some of the programs, such as the curriculum work, which we'll probably be able to continue doing for the most part, and some other planning and maybe some, you know, remote virtual work. So we hopefully can generate some more revenue for the last 3 months of the year. Expense side, for the most part, all the expenses were tracking according to budget. You know, we were on pace to either come in under or at budget for just about everything. A couple of areas that you'll see have some zeros. The audit, the current fiscal year audit, those expenses would not be incurred until the year is closed, and then the audit actually occurs. So that's normal for that to be open at this point in time. And then down below, foundation, in-kind costs, there's some allocation entries that were still pending and will be posted before the end of the year, so that will be reflected. And as Ingrid just spoke about, the relocation, you know, still pending, nothing's executed, so no costs incurred to date. So we were, you know, at zero for that as well, and we'll finish out the year without incurring any relocation costs. So that budget will roll to next year yet again. Program costs, we were over, but that was expected because we had added a lot of additional activities for the year, and there was to be additional grant funding and in district work and so on to cover those costs. So we were going to be okay there. And you'll note that there's a $289,000 shortfall. And as I mentioned a short time ago, that is basically the billing to CSDE for the February activities. So we would be made whole once we collected on that. Speaking to cash flow and the remaining part of the year, we have 3 months until the end of the fiscal year of June 30. Currently, we had, as of last week, a little over $700,000 in cash and 600 and change due collectible from the state. So that would get us to 1.3 million in available cash. I worked out a projection for the last 3 months. We had 7 payrolls remaining to get through the end of the year, 3 months of employee benefits for April, May, and June, and then 3 months of normal operating activities such as rent, utilities, basic service provider fees, and such. In total, that would probably be about 1.1 million. So based on a very rough estimate, we'd probably have about $200,000 surplus. But naturally, there's some variables involved there because we have some contracts which we collected on but haven't executed yet for various in-district work. So if we cannot negotiate extensions on postponements to future dates, there may be some monies that would due back. Worst case scenario is probably about 50,000 that would have to go back in those industry contracts. But, you know, we're optimistic we can negotiate extensions on most of them. I mentioned the SETG work. As of this week, there was approximately 170,000 that was in limbo. So unless we get an extension or can work out uses for the money, that is potential money that's in the bank, but you know there may be a liability or an obligation to remit back. And also on the DMIS opioid grant, we have about 150,000 in-house in the bank that we haven't executed on, that we'll also have to negotiate either extensions or alternative ways of delivering some of the activities. So at this point in time, we should be okay as long as we can negotiate extensions and so on. But I am also looking at alternative funding sources via the various federal and state programs that are coming online. I've even reached out to our bank regarding a line of credit, just exploring all our options in case we have a cash flow shortfall and just need to basically keep the agency operational and cover the basic expenses. So if anything comes to fruition, I will go back out through the finance committee and the board, and in conjunction with Ingrid, if any potential, you know, funding activities that we'll probably need board approval on, but we will keep you posted on those things.
Thank you, Glenn. I think that my, through the committee, with my advice is that we need to be as conservative as we can, anticipating that the cost of government has escalated tremendously over the last few months. And at some point, OPM, at the direction of the governor, will be looking to create the most favorable financial situation for the state as they can, anticipating the next year. And it's not uncommon for them to claw back any uncommitted funds that they can. And so I just think that we just need to be, we need to assess our vulnerability in those environments and be as careful as we can as we move forward. So given the circumstances, I don't know that we could be in a better shape. And Glenn, thank you very much for being such a careful custodian.
Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you.
Maybe what we could do is entertain some scenarios. If the state opens on the 20th, or if it doesn't, and then what the implications and the impact of that would be, and figure out, you know, ways that we could transform some of the training that we were going to do, and develop them into virtual opportunities, so we can, you know, at least attract some resources back into the agency.
Yeah, that's the coordination.
Yeah,
that's the coordination between the program committee in this case and the and with the consideration of its financial implications for the agency. So that's
sorry, my dogs have been naughty this afternoon and driving me crazy. So my dogs, they see a fly, they see a bird 5 miles out, and they're driving me insane.
Well,
so,
just having you there must be good.
Well, they don't know what to do with me because they have a schedule. You know, when I'm not here, everybody's taking a nap, everybody's good. But now, you know, windows are open, slider is open. So they come every 2 minutes asking for a treat. So anyway, thank you, Glenn.
We'll move on to number 9, foundation. I don't know if Jeff is on the line. I think not.
Jeff, are you still there?
Yeah, I just unmuted myself. Sorry.
Oh, great. Absolutely. Let's get a...
And I'm still here.
So, Jeff, if you want to...
So, yeah, just quickly, and in the interest of some verbal efficiency here, the foundation is working to update some things that need to be done regarding our bylaws. We've been reviewing that, having discussions with the foundation boards about some things that we feel need to be done in order to move the foundation forward. We are in the process of developing a budget recommendation, which will include some staffing from funds from the foundation, and making sure that we're ready to move forward as best we can. Lord knows, as everyone has said in this conversation, what life is going to be like after after this calms down and hopefully stays away as long as possible. We're looking at reaching out to other possible financial sources ourselves, but clearly, things are a little bit at a standstill right now. Our work with Graustein, they're very accommodating, and we're sure that we'll be able to continue making sure that work gets done, even after the end of this fiscal year. I think everyone as part of the foundation understands that Graustein really has some flexible thoughts about moving forward. They want to get some work done, but they're quite flexible about it. So we're looking and making sure that continues. And at the moment, I'd say that's about it, unless anyone else wants to put some thoughts into the conversation. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. I think the most important things are, one, to the recommendation that should come, or hopefully can come as soon as possible, so that the Big Sur will have all of the information necessary to develop its budget for next year and do what we, and in with consideration for the foundation and what it needs to do. I just want to remind everybody that many of the activities, particularly the conference that the foundation had played such a role in, has been canceled. So a lot of those generating opportunities are not there. You know, we'll still continue to pursue, I think, whatever grants or whatever might be available. But the circumstances has had its impact on the foundation as well. But I do think that we need to make sure that particularly the budget planning process that we have from the foundation, the information that's necessary in order for us to have it as a meaningful part of our budget making process. So I have one thing that
George, just thank you for reminding me about the conference. Did we actually have to expend any money due to the cancellation, or were they understanding and anything on that? Does anyone know?
Yeah, I could provide some information, Jeff, to that. Actually, we were very incredibly fortunate for the great work of the team that we do not have any penalties at all.
Great.
So we were looking at a penalty of approximately $45,000 because of the deposit and the time. But after conversations and decisions and a lot of negotiation and politically savviness, I will not disclose the sources. We were able to get to a very accommodating agreement, and they understood. They understood.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Great.
Excellent. I have one other item that I wanted to, I neglected to have Ingrid put it under my report, but we need to, I'm going to be asking Liz and the operations committee to support me in looking at the work that has to be done in constructing the next 3-year contract for the executive director, including the salary recommendation. We're at the final year of the existing contract, and we want to not have that work get behind us, or be behind in considering it. So I'm going to be, Liz, with your cooperation, probably asking if we can have one of these Zoom conferences or what, or meet together 6 feet apart and get each other's review the current situation and prepare to make recommendations regarding it for the future. So with your support and cooperation, look forward to that engagement.
Sounds like a plan.
Thank you. Other agenda items? Anything for the good of the order?
Just one comment. Tomorrow, Ingrid and I, as I shared with you for programming, have a strategic meeting with Brian Klimkowitz. And some of the topics are around, revenue streaming for the remainder of this year. So we will keep you updated with what transpires with our conversation. Ingrid's really crafted some really good ideas and some good questions that we need to ask so that we can really begin to move forward and address some of these concerns around our, you know, current programming budget. What do you think, Ingrid?
You know, and in your meeting tomorrow, I think it's a good opportunity, this situation, in our new facility, when we were talking about having state-of-the-art distance learning and telecommunication capabilities, I think that these crises, this crisis and those that will certainly follow, will certainly give them a more concrete opportunity to consider what the benefits of this can be to the state. So I think that whenever we can reinforce the opportunities to develop our capacity with their support, I think that could be a good thing. So good luck to you both as you do.
And given Ingrid's leadership and how she's reached out to, you know, the commissioner, the governor, the Rusk Alliance, we have positioned ourselves in a very positive way as being one of the key partners supporting the State Department of Ed in helping our districts, our families, our educators around supporting our students with disabilities. So that's another topic that's going to be addressed tomorrow is how, you know, we've already sent out this great LibGuide that was done with the, on the directive from Tom Boudreau, who oversees assistive technology and accessible educational materials for students with disabilities. That was very well received and was sent to the commissioner to as an example of what CERC can do to help support our educators and families, specifically those who really need accessible materials. And Brian will, and I will be, and Ingrid will be previewing an additional LibGuide that our staff is currently working on with a variety of additional materials and supports for families and educators to help them through this crisis. So we positioned ourselves very well in that kind of work to promote and support the work of the Bureau and the State Department on behalf of our families and educators.
Thank you.
That sounds great.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Thank you.
No, I just said that sounds great. I know that we had talked about this a little bit on our program call, and it just seems since our call that I've been hearing more and more about difficulties, lack of access that families are having, and educators are finding difficult to be able to connect and support those families in particular. So I'm excited to hear that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we have reached our hour. We're about 5 minutes over. I want to thank you all for your participation. And seeing that we've exhausted our agenda, I will entertain a motion for adjournment.
Moved.
Second?
Jeff, seconds.
Thank you. All right. Oh, thank you very much. This meeting is now adjourned. Be safe.
Thank you.
And we look forward to meeting again in May.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.
Ingrid, I'll reach out to you. I have a question, but I'll call you on your line. All right?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
Bearing with me. Thank you.
Bye, Jen. Great job, as always.
Great job, Jen.
Thank you.
Take care.
Stay healthy.
You too.
Agnes, you're going to call me on the CERC line, or you're going to call me on my phone?
Which number do you prefer me to call you at?
Feel free to call me on my cell phone.
I don't know. I have it. I don't think I have it.
Okay. 860.
Yeah.
4.
What?
860.
Yeah.
485.
Yeah.
4013.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, sure.
Bye, everybody.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.